Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 148 for April 2nd, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp, and we're talking about stuff from this year, not 10 years ago.
Right. Yes, that was fun to do. I realized how uninformed about technology I was in 2003 when I looked at those stories and realized that Joe, you and Ricky needed to take lead on most of those.
I was surprised at just how much I remembered. And I think that's where the conviction and the thing that made it believable was that it was like reliving it all over again. And I was thinking, wow, I remember thinking about this as it was happening. And this is how I felt.
I actually went back and pulled up my notes from working in state government at that time and saw all the tech logs that I had to do about how I fixed this guy's, you know, this, and I had to go in and change that guy with an auto config sys. And I was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I actually worked on a system with Vista Invert. Oh my gosh, I can't believe. Oh, wow. So again, you know, those kinds of things just kind of remind us how we got from there to here. And if you haven't heard it, definitely pop back to our April 1st Serotalk. You might find yourself wondering just exactly what kind of technology we were talking about. And that's why there are show notes for that as well. So you can actually click on those links and relive the past of yesteryear.
Well, things may be more advanced 10 years later, but they're not problem-free by any means, especially when a spam filtering organization and a website decide to get into a little battle. So Cyberbunker is a hosting site that says it will host pretty much anything except for child pornography and terrorism. That sets the bar pretty low, if you ask me. And Spam House says, you know what, we're going to block you because we don't like some of the stuff that you are allowing on the internet. And so Cyberbunker issues a denial of service attack against Spam House, if I have all this correct, causing a humongous traffic jam on the internet.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because we led with the story in our April 1st podcast about an attack that was slowing down the internet. Then it was, they were targeting SQL servers, but it just goes to show you some things really don't change. And the effects of this were actually very similar, where people were having major internet slowdowns because of the denial of service attack.
It's funny because one of the stories that didn't make it to that list on April 1st was a bit about Congress passing an anti-spam law. And 10 years later, still kind of the same thing. And then what can happen is you can have copycats. So if something was very successful, you can have others redirect their malice towards other sites like Wells Fargo getting a DDoS attack. And that can actually do more harm because now we're not just talking about somebody, you know, doing some harm to a company who just doesn't appreciate what another company might be doing or something of that nature. Now you're going after financial networks, and that affects a lot of people. And it goes from being something that is kind of cute and a little bit of a inconvenience to something that could actually disrupt economies or places of scale.
The same thing can happen with businesses moving all of their data to the cloud. We like to think that this kind of thing is going to be protected. In the olden days, businesses would store this stuff on tape backups and they'd have it offsite. And, you know, they could be targeted if somebody tried to target them directly. But what happens when people start looking at Amazon, where a lot of businesses have their stuff stored on EC2, What happened recently is that apparently a lot of these businesses who stored very sensitive information didn't set the flag to make sure this was private. So the URLs are generated in such a way that it's fairly easy to actually find this sensitive information just by looking at a company's domain, guessing a portion of the URL, and aha, look at this. We have all of this data, like credit card expenditures, employee records,
even
sensitive company data about stuff that may be patented soon. So businesses, if you're putting your stuff in the cloud, you want to make sure that you have made it private, because the amount of information that can be gotten if somebody stumbles on this is really, really frightening.
And this is different than, say, the Matt Honan thing with Amazon. In that situation, it was more of a social attack in which they had used social engineering to gain the passwords and to go after Matt. This is about totally different.
Understanding how the URLs are built and then just using that knowledge to, all right, let's look at this domain. Let's look at that one. And, oh, look here. We got data.
Well, look, maybe that this year is the year of security stories so far, because you factor in the two-factor authentication stories that we've had about Apple and some of the changes that were going on there. iMore has had some great articles about how Apple had to take that stuff down, because if somebody knew your birthday and your Apple ID, they pretty much had into your iCloud, and so there were some changes there. If you listen to last week's Mac Break Weekly, link in the show notes, you will hear a lot about how that initially went. And there's been a lot of people really coming out and identifying a lot of these things, because it's not just Apple. Remember, Samsung had some issues already last week, too, with lock screens. As the technology gets more complex, as I said in Star Trek 3, it's easier to gum up the works.
Moving on to AT stories for this week. As we were recording our podcast last week, our very own CEO, Mr. Mike Calvo, appeared on the Wall Street Journal's Lunch Break Live, which was an internet, webcast, talking about shopping sites or just websites in general for people with disabilities and, you know, how, what needs to be done to make those accessible. And discussions of litigation certainly came up. And Mike took a really positive approach, I thought, and said, hey, blind people have money too, and if we can just help these, you know, these developers to understand the benefits of making sites accessible, maybe it doesn't even have to always come to, you know, lawsuits and that sort of thing.
He expanded on this a bit in a blog post. This is from the Saratalk blog, called "The Court of Public Opinion is Not the Last Resort." And here he talks about, what we want is for sites to become accessible, but how do we do that? And previously, people may have thought that, well, a lawsuit is going to be the only thing that will allow a company to sit up and take notice. But in this blog, he talks about how social media can be tremendously effective in making a company pay attention to you, because now companies are watching it and consumers are watching social media as well. So, you know, it can have a more immediate effect, or just simply approaching the developer of a site and saying, this isn't accessible, but don't freak out. There's hope. There is a way to fix this. You may have to start from scratch, but then again, you may not. And whatever the case, it's always going to be more cost effective to build in accessibility for your site from the ground up rather than having to go back and refit later.
I had a really positive experience with the Audible app. So this is not website related, but it's a related discussion. I downloaded the latest update to the app and wasn't seeing badges. Didn't know if that was because VoiceOver wasn't reading them or if they were in a different place. As it turns out, it was a little bit of both. There were some placement changes. I was able to have my sighted wife confirm that. And VoiceOver wasn't giving me some information as clearly as it could have. So I ended up visiting with their social media person via email. She actually played with VoiceOver for the first time ever and was able to understand some of the problems I was experiencing, gave me specific instructions on how to view badges, so it is doable, and, you know, said that she would pass on information about some ways that maybe VoiceOver could be a little more chatty and a little more friendly. So I was really pleased with that whole correspondence.
That's excellent. And by the way, regarding Audible, for anyone who has been kind of watching the saga about the latest Victor Reader Stream and Audible support, Humanware had a press release saying that they are in fact solidifying their partnership with Audible, and there will be a software update released to give Audible support on the latest Victor Reader Stream.
Yeah, that's just another example of what Mike was talking about with, you know, effective advocacy. It's a lot better than having standards thrown at you and then everything being the exact same, and then having technology people and engineers go, I can't be the exact same. My site needs to look different than everybody else's. Oh, my gosh. And here we go again. I think it's very important that we understand that there are just some things that are done in this way to make it more interesting, to make it more visually appealing, whether we like it or not. That is exactly what's going on. And so sometimes we're a slave to fashion. But with that said, you might be actually trying to use a different device to be able to read those websites with. And if it's a Nokia device, you've got a free update to the screen reader, which is available now. Code Factory is continued to operate the Code Factory commitment to the Nokia platform. And you can find that on the Nokia store, or you can read about all the changes on the Code Factory website. Link in the show notes at sarotalk.com.
Well, here's one I'm happy to see. It's an article in the Houston Chronicle, and it's talking about how the Department of Assistive and Rehabilitative Services in Texas had a class in learning to apply makeup. This particular article is a picture gallery, so it may benefit you more as a low vision person than a totally blind person, but there is a little bit in the article which talks about how to apply makeup. There's also one in Vision Aware that is a tutorial for how to do this, and I think this is something that should be more prevalent. I don't think it's absolutely necessary that every woman wear makeup, but if it's something that you are interested in doing, I think it's a good idea to have someone there to give you tips and tricks on how to do that. My mom, unfortunately, loves to tell the story of the first day that I tried to put on makeup. My mom gave me makeup and said, go give it a shot, but she really didn't think about the types of things that I would need to know. So I come out and I apparently look like a clown. Yeah, you know, I have blush over the entirety of my cheek. I have lipstick on, which is kind of going down probably to my chin, and just this horrible mess of my attempt to put on makeup. Yeah, I would have fit in great at a concert like that.
You were halfway there.
But she
shaving
later,
was just as bad, so don't feel bad. I have some shaving stories that I could discuss at some point or time.
Boy.
And there's a reason why I gave up trying to do Fu Manchus or anything else like that in radio. I was just like, that's the clean shaven guy. It was just quicker and easier.
But my mom did later teach me about, you know, this is where this makeup should go, and this is where you wear that kind of makeup. And I also went to a counter in a department store, and the makeup at those counters is a little more expensive, but to me, it tends to last longer. I like it better, and you have the added benefit that the person behind the counter, whose job it is to match skin tones and things like that, can give you an idea of, you know, what type of makeup you should be wearing. And usually they'll have a couple of people, so you'll get more than one opinion on, does this match your skin tone? Is this the style that you're looking for? That kind of thing.
Continuing in the theme of training, Fedora Outlier is getting ready to release their first book, The Old Hat Guide to iPhone Accessibility. It sounds like it's going to be a multimedia presentation. I'm not quite sure how this is going to work, but I will be interested to check it out. I think when the time comes, if you go ahead and pre-order now, you have the chance to be entered into a drawing for a 16 gig iPad mini. Wow, that sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it, guys? Because Saratech is just finishing up our survey for this drawing as well.
Yes, iPad minis, good prize to give away.
Yeah, indeed. Also, our very own Lisa Salinger is getting ready to do some iPhone and iPod training on her website, and you can check that out in the show notes. Lisa really enjoys doing basic training type work, and she's quite good at it. So, you know, she won't run off and leave you. She will work with you. So definitely check out her site, and you can learn more about how this is going to work and get some training on using your iDevice.
And if you're a Samnet subscriber, you can actually attend some of Lisa's trainings on Saratech products. Each month, Lisa hosts a training here within the Samnet System Access Mobile Network. And it's just one of the benefits of being a subscriber with System Access Mobile Network. So you can actually come on in and talk with other people who are getting live training with Lisa. She's really good at it and has been doing it for a while. So one of the benefits of membership. Also, rumor, ready? If you're not, be prepared. iPhone 5S, June 20th?
Saw that this morning.
Yeah, looks like I guess that's going to be the counter to another Microsoft story coming up.
There you go. Well, if you're looking for a way to keep up with everything that's happening in the rumor mill, or perhaps you just want to subscribe to something like Ars Technica or The Verge or wherever it is that you get your news, you probably want a nice and easy way to keep up with all of those RSS feeds that are floating around. Why not check out QFeed? This is the latest from Mongoose Q with the Q Continuum Enterprises. For $10, you can get this cross-platform solution that is, of course, totally accessible and will assist you in keeping up with all of those RSS feeds. I really like the fact that this is cross-platform, so you can have it on your Windows machine and your Mac. And there is a way that you can try it before you purchase it. So go and check out the link in the show notes to take a look at QFeed.
More closer to the Microsoft front that I mentioned a moment ago, Internet Explorer 10 is, of course, out. You might be interested in how to use the RSS feed reader and other parts of that particular new browser. You can do so by looking at this particular link that we have here in the show notes that you could use said web browser to get to. That actually gives you an idea of what it's like to use JAWS 14 with Internet Explorer 10. And of course, if you didn't know, there's an Internet Explorer 11 coming. Again, we'll talk about that in a moment.
Finally, in AT news, we must stop and acknowledge or discuss the passing of a truly important person, a truly wonderful man. Mark Marvel is someone I never had the opportunity to meet personally, but I have spoken to him several times with Saratech, Sarotalk, and with my work with an ACB radio and Main Menu and that sort of thing. Mark was an extremely positive individual, just very highly motivated, a great guy to talk to, dealt with a tremendous amount of health issues if you knew anything about him at all. But in spite of that, continued to do a lot of work with Blind Ambitions groups, had a magazine out for a time, and just will be just sorely missed in the blind community. And Joe, I know that you have some personal thoughts. I'm going to let you have some time and just share those.
Sure. Mark was an individual who I met almost 13 years ago and in Houston when I first started with the Commission for the Blind at the time. And Mark was very positive in dealing with some of the issues of his blindness. He was someone who had to adjust to blindness very quickly and came from the world of employment. So as an employment assistant specialist, it was really interesting to talk to Mark because he had some great ideas about what it was like to maintain and obtain employment. And as you said, he was just very positive. Even when things looked darkest before the dawn, he was always very much finding something funny to say. And he was very supportive of me early in my career. And I really valued that because it helped me a great deal. He had different surgeries, and he would call me up and say things like, you know, well, I'm going to lose part of the foot tomorrow. And that just means I don't have to go to soccer practice. And so he was always that kind of guy. And I always appreciated that. We've stayed in contact over the years. And he would always call me around convention time because he always wanted to stay up on the latest. And of course, that goes, like you said, back to his time with Main Menu and other things that he had done. Mark helped me a great deal in always remembering that just because you're blind or visually impaired does not mean that's the only issue that you have. And one of the last conversations that we had just a few months ago was that he was very depressed that he wasn't able to use touchscreen devices because his fingertips had been removed and he was having some issues with some of the false and some of the things that you add to your fingers to help you prosthetically use other devices. And I told him, I said, you know, you could actually do what those Yankee people do and put the little metal tips like they do on their gloves to be able to use iPhones. And he was elated at that. And so there was always a dynamic of bouncing off ideas with him. He was just very positive, and I'm going to definitely miss his counsel. So rest in peace, Mark. Well, coming up after the break, we'll find out why Ricky is so blue, why Jamie is so frustrated with his updates, and better yet, what it's like to walk around virtually into walls. All that and more on Serotalk 148.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the Accessibility Anywhere people.
Welcome back to Serotalk 148, where we move at the speed of light on this prize. Sometimes I really wish we do, or sometimes you, the listener, might wish that we do on a longer kind of conversation. These newfangled ways of being able to push the data bits across the internets is just amazing. As we see here in this article, that they have found a way to do certain things with the speed of light. There's also an article this week that the speed of light is not constant, which I think is really interesting that we actually have that on twitter.com/EOL show. So if you want to be able to follow quirky stories, that's probably the place on the SPN to be able to read those. But what do we think? The speed of light? I just got 12 megabits down here in a small town in Texas, so this won't happen until probably the third millennium, but
yeah, that's pretty much true. Well, right now, I was surprised to know that before this breakthrough, they were pushing data through these fiber optic lines at, I think, 65% the speed of light, and now they've gotten it up to 97%. And it just amazes me to know that something is traveling that fast. They'll probably, what happens if the data travels faster than the speed of light? Then we all go back in time or something?
So did my finances. always going backwards, never forwards, not a shark IB. The thing about this kind of thing is I keep thinking after having my sixth trip with AT&T coming out to my house to troubleshoot our DSL, and by the way, the linemen are now on my Christmas card list, is that you've got to be at least 5,000 feet from the node, ma'am, to make that work. they're using air in weird ways. And I found out recently that a lot of these lines are pressurized anyway. But it's interesting to think of data working in a clean environment and how this stuff can kind of sort of go back and forth. And of course, then you throw that into the fact that cloaking technology is semi-real. They have some ideas about making cloaking technology real, and they've had some really weird ways of bending light that has been happening within the last year. Throw that down to the ability of transporting atoms through a teleporter, or a transporter, if you will. And, you know, my mom was just saying the other day that she said, you know, when does it become the Star Trek comm badge? And we're not too far away from that. It could be the new Apple 5S could be just a comm badge. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Or maybe another product that we'll talk about here a little later, perhaps, that we keep hearing rumors of.
Well, we got to get through Ricky feeling blue.
Yeah.
Yes.
Why are you blue, Ricky?
Well, this blue screen and windows.
Oh, I don't think they ever thought of that. I loaded this up in BSOD.
That's right. Microsoft did confirm that Windows Blue is happening, but they did also say we're not actually going to call it that, which is a smart move. The concept behind this is that Microsoft is moving to a similar playbook as Apple and others in the industry as far as going to the yearly update rather than having a huge, you know, paradigm shift every 3 years or what have you. So now we're looking at Windows 8, and a year later, we're going to see an update to that that's going to cost much less to move to, and they're going to continue this. They're already doing this with Office 2013. Microsoft is really moving away from the box philosophy where you buy your OS in a box and you wait, and there might be a service pack or two, but the next time the big update rolls around, you got to buy a new OS. Now they're just saying, no, let's take Office, let's take Windows, and people can pay for yearly updates, but they'll pay significantly less than they did to move from one OS to another. So they're getting people used to the idea of this kind of service model as opposed to the boxed software model.
Which means we, as people who use assistive technology, have to get used to the idea that there's a new update every year, if not every 3 months in the Windows world, which is something new, because there are people out there probably listening to us right this very second who are holding on to XP and saying, you can remove this from my cold, dead hands, which you again, once again, we need to touch on this, April 8th, 2014, circle that on your calendar, because that is the last day of security updates for Windows XP and Office 2003. That is not going to change. There will be no reprieve. This is really, really it. And you want to start thinking about getting off of Windows XP and even Windows Vista now. Now, 7 and up, 7 and up, that's where we want to start thinking. Or, if you want, you could think about just giving it all up altogether. Somebody over at the company formerly known as RIM just did this. Remember, we call it BlackBerry now, it's not RIM.
Right. Oh, yes.
Right, yes.
So, sinking ship, because the fourth quarter numbers came in, they sold over a million Z10s or Z10s. And they had a profit over at BlackBerry, yet RIM's founder decided to leave anyway. But, you know, he was selling off stock a couple of months ago. I'm not surprised by this, because this was back in October. They were actually saying, you know, why is BlackBerry guys, you know, selling off stock if they believe in it so much, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I don't know what his role is in the company anymore. This is Mike Lazaridis, I think is how you say his name.
Yeah, I was afraid to try that with speech.
She took the bullet. She did it.
I did it. So I'm happy to be wrong. Thorsten Hines is the CEO, and you know, this guy basically said, it's in good hands now, but I don't know how he was contributing before he left. I think this has been coming for a long time. I think he's kind of been slowly backing away. And finally, he's like, all right, whatever happens, I just don't want to do this anymore.
Well, it's not as embarrassing as the Best Buy founder who left, tried to buy the company, take it private, failed, and is now coming back to Best Buy. That seems a little... know, whoops, sorry guys, didn't mean any of that stuff for the last year. I'm back. Where'd all my stuff go?
And why aren't you all smiling? Aren't you glad to see me?
Where's my cat poster of just hang it in there, doggone it? My accessories. Where did all my accessories go?
Wow.
I don't think this I know there's been some major setbacks on BlackBerry, and the QWERTY version of the new BlackBerry is still coming. And of course, one of the big holders is supposedly the company that was behind the 1 million order of BlackBerries. I don't think that this sounds a death knell at any stage for the company formerly known as RIM. I think, again, that what gets lost in some of these media posts, and it's been said in other places, is that they're still retaining the major customers that they have, and they might be able to just continue to live at 3% or 10%. Even, you know, they've added some media functions, so they have a streaming service coming, and certainly Netflix saying, look, we're not making that for BlackBerry. We're kind of sort of stepping away. And they even admitted last week that 10% of these new apps that are coming in are Android ports. Not that that's a bad thing. Certainly, if you're an Android developer, if you can just modify your code just a little bit and go, woohoo, I'm on another platform, that's kind of a cool thing. But I don't know that this really ends everything. The same way that Windows, Microsoft's one of their PR guys came out and said, look, there are actually 8 markets in which Windows Phone is beating the iPhone. And of course, the press all jumped all over that. It was like, where? You know? And it was like places like Indonesia and India. And India is not a small market. So, you know, the traditional markets where Nokia does really, really well, or Nokia, depending how you want to pronounce that. So Nokia is not completely against the wall either. And they didn't do as bad in the fourth quarter as everybody thought they were going to. So it may be a factor of we have two major guys like iOS and Android, and then we have a cadre of people at 3%, 5%, 10%, and that may be just fine.
You know, you mentioned Windows Phone. We actually have an article here that talks about what it's like to use Windows Phone for a month. Now, unfortunately, that does not have a screen reader present, and so blind people cannot use it.
I refuse to rub my nose up against it with screen magnification. Sorry.
Well, there you go. That's quite all right.
Not actually, until they come out with the nose tip that allows you to actually.
Correct. It's called the Rudolph.
You can double tap things and slide them around all with your nose.
You say that as if it's a joke, but there are some low vision people. Anyway, they use Galaxy Note 2s. But
but the takeaway that I got out of this article, of course, a lot of it's visual and, you know, nice animation and blah, 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 and stuff I can't really relate to. But the thing I did get out of the article was that apparently for someone who wants a little more than just a dumb phone, who actually wants to have some internet access, that sort of thing, but maybe doesn't want all of the bells and whistles of an Android or iOS device, Windows Phone might actually do the job.
Yeah, it's interesting. They did say that if you're switching from iOS or Android, it's going to be difficult. It's not going to be impossible, but it would be difficult for you to get used to Windows Phone because it is so much less in some ways, especially when it comes to apps. Also, if you have been living in the Google ecosystem, you're going to have a real problem because Windows Phone doesn't yet sync with any of the Google stuff. So if you have your calendar and docs and all that stuff in the Google ecosystem, this would be a hard switch.
And thank you to the three people offline who told me that I had to apologize to Ricky this week for her being right and me being wrong. I really appreciate that. I am to say to Ricky that, yes, that isn't what the article was about last week and that I am completely wrong and I'm supposed to bend on one knee and kiss the ring of Miss Enger. So I do so admittedly that, yes, I did do bad and Ricky was right about the point she was trying to make. There.
All right. So, Patrick, take that little snippet. We're going to keep that as a loop and just
that's
insert it randomly
tone,
from now on.
That's
every
okay.
week, and it'll then, show up somewhere.
take that piece where she said she was wrong and just play it right after. So we'll just go back and forth.
So when we at Serotech call Ricky's extension, we'll get the internal message. It will be that loop.
That's right.
when you call Serotech and get Ricky's voicemail, that will play before it, just in case you have to leave Ricky a message.
Right. That's, yeah. There you go.
That's, she and commands yeah. it.
Awesome.
If you have updated to iOS 6.1.3, which I still have not yet, you may still be plagued with some Wi-Fi and battery drain issues. Apple has had this, at least a couple of these issues since iOS 6.0. The Wi-Fi issue was a major one that most people said was fixed in 6.2, but some users are still experiencing this Wi-Fi connectivity issue.
To launch, doesn't it? I mean, that
it does. That this has been something since, again, the beginning of iOS 6, and for most people, it's gone. But for some people, it's still not. The same thing is true for the battery draining issues. That's the kind of thing that tends to plague Apple software launches. I remember iOS 5 had major battery draining issues, and they slowly but surely kind of took care of all of those, and now it looks like in iOS 6, that's coming back, namely for the people who are using Exchange. For some reason, it still doesn't happen to everybody, but for some people who do use Exchange on their phones, this issue is present. So you wanna watch out if you do the update, and you know, keep an eye on whether this is happening to you.
And remember that there are different iPhones. There are now three SKUs, with the T mobile phone kind of being a tweaked version of the AT&T phone. And you can actually start to pre-order the iPhone 5 on T-Mobile for as low as $560. I think it's like between $560 and $580, with a $99 upfront, which is still cheaper than buying it outright at $629 to $650, depending on your carrier and the size of memory and all that fun stuff.
Or you can pay $20 a month after you do that $99 thing.
Yeah, and it still comes out to be a pretty doggone good deal. So if that's mm-hmm. what you – and we've talked about that a couple of times here on the show. But if that's what you choose to do and you're okay doing that, there are some termination fees and things like that. So you definitely want to head over to the T-Mobile website. But those – things that we had talked about that were all hypotheticals are all now real, and you can check that out at T-Mobile and see what's going on with the no contract and using an iPhone. And you can actually bring over an AT&T. There's some articles out there. If you follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Serotalk, or the same articles can be found at the Triple Click home feed, twitter.com/TripleClickHome. Now, an article that I don't think made it over to this new episode of Triple Click Home, Jamie, you can correct me here, is a lawsuit about Siri in China.
Yeah, saw that. This just popped up. And, you know, I don't know. It's just one of those things that just, again, makes my head hurt. Just another company that says, hey, we had Siri. We had this technology back in, I forget what it was, 2004.
2004, yeah. Yeah.
And so we kind of want you to either pay us money or just take Siri off. It's like, come on, guys.
I know. And I'm not even sure exactly what they had patented, because I was talking about this service, Zhijin, I think. That's probably way off. But in any case, I don't speak Chinese. Sorry. If somebody, if any of you do, tell us how to pronounce this. They had this service that I think did some voice recognition and also allowed for chat and some other things. So the thing is that a lot of companies have done voice recognition. I mean, look at Dragon Dictate, which was on iPhones and still is. It doesn't interact with the web searches and things in the same way that Siri does, but it does have voice recognition. So why aren't they saying, well, you know, this voice recognition thing, nobody can use it without paying us stuff. Now, granted, Dragon Dictate is a Nuance thing, and Siri has some licensing from Nuance as well, so I guess they're not going to fight with themselves, but still, it's just one of those things, where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
And in what country? Because, you know, look at Brazil. The iPhone is not the iPhone in Brazil. And in China, there's an iPhone knockoff that runs Android.
My goodness.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. I mean, there is going to have to be some, I don't know, standardization, some laws, some... This
trade
is just
going
to run its course at some... There you go. Yeah. Just going to run its course at
we'll
some
trade
point.
You, we'll trade you that for one Walmart shipping container later. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Well... One of the things that Mike Calvo has done recently, and I'm sure he will be talking to us about it at some point, he has, drumroll please, jailbroken his iPhone. He did it. And one of the things he was really excited about the other night when I was talking to him was that he had this app that he could just update all of his apps all at once. I guess would automatically keep everything updated, basically. And then I see this article, and it's talking about this. So that's jailbreaking is something I've never had the slightest bit of interest in. I get it. I understand why people do it. I understand the, I suppose, benefits is the right word. It's probably something I will never do, but if it's something that you're interested in, you don't want to update to 6.3 of the iOS operating system, because then you can't do that. But if you're interested in this app, check it out. Link here, right here in the show notes, and you can learn all about that.
Yeah, no more of that pesky opening the app store and then choosing the update all button. Man, yep,
that's so hard. It is.
That takes like 1.3 seconds out of my life. How dare you? How dare you?
Well, at least with this, you wouldn't have to even touch your touchscreen to update it.
Until 6.14 kills all your
automatically.
Until the next patch kills your jailbreak or something.
And talking about not touching your touchscreens, it looks like, or not looking at your touchscreens, it looks like Apple is patenting gesture control with your screen off. So the idea is that you could, for example, do a clockwise motion on your screen to turn the volume up and a counterclockwise motion to turn it down. You might be able to flick right to go to the next track and flick left to go back. And, you know, some things that may actually, some gestures that may actually already be familiar to those of us who use VoiceOver. A lot of these did sound quite familiar, but you wouldn't have to look at your screen to do any of this. And it's speculated that they may be trying to patent this for the iWatch. This is just one of those things where you could reach over and, again, turn up the volume and switch songs or whatever, and you don't even have to glance down at your iWatch to do that. It's still amusing to me that the Samsung rumors about the S Watch or whatever they're going to call it, the Swatch, they're more solid than the Apple iWatch rumors, but somebody's going to make one of these things. And I kind of think it's unfortunate if one company patents being able to touch the screen without looking at it and do certain things.
Sing it, sister. You know where I am on this. You've heard me already with Buddy. This is another
like
battleground.
I like this crusade of sighted people not looking at screens.
I'm all about that.
Oh, man.
Well, I mean, that's better than Google Glass and them running over you with their autonomous vehicles. But the idea here is just a couple of weeks ago, Samsung showed how you could hover over a button on the Samsung Galaxy 4 and it would click it. And the idea, of course, is that if for people who are wearing gloves or something like that, they could actually kind of hover over and be able to do without having to touch the screen at all. So not like Kinect, where you have to be like a far bit away from the camera and wave your arms kind of wildly. This is just you hovering over a control and having it, you know, fire. And it's like what we just described here. I really don't like these patents on input, because that means anybody who does want to jump from platform A to platform B is going to have some issues, because it doesn't exactly go the way that you expect it to go if you came from platform A. And on this new episode of That Android Show, Steve and crew get into it a little bit about One Touch coming back to TalkBack, because a lot of TalkBack users are still not thrilled that there have been things added to TalkBack to make it more iOS friendly for those who want to jump from iOS, because it's being felt like this is a down arrow in the making. And that is a very interesting concept going forward.
Well, to me, it's about how are we going to get any kind of universal design, you know, talking eyes free, not necessarily blindness related, but eyes free devices that you can do certain things that feel very intuitive and have your devices respond accordingly. If one person patents this, then everybody else is stuck not implementing it, even if they wanted to. And, you know, it's going to hold everything back quite a bit if people don't have the freedom to, again, implement this kind of intuitive universal design stuff, even if they want to.
Or they have to engineer around it so it's the same but different, so it doesn't have the same feel or flow, or there's a hesitation due to the workaround.
You have to rub your knuckles on it instead of your fingertips. That's how we got around it.
Exactly. Or your nose.
Or your nose.
Using the Rudolph. Yeah. There's certainly that opportunity. I just, you know, it seems very, very silly. And of course, you know, imagine if this had happened 30 years ago and everybody fought over the mouse click. And there really were different mice back then. There were mice with three buttons before we had the scroll wheel, which was its own scroll. There was even a fight over the magnification on keyboards and the magnification on doing that in Windows, being able to push something forward to be able to zoom in on things. It wasn't necessarily related to assistive technology. It was really just related to making a picture bigger or to do what you normally do with control and scroll wheel. But still, there was a little bit of a battle. So anything that involves input is kind of my touchstone about this, because we've talked about it now for more than a year. What we've also been talking about for a while now is indoor navigation. We've talked about Google Maps and doing some stuff with offline mode. We've talked about Google Glass and indoor maps, and that some buildings, like some of the New York airports, are now on Google Street View as indoor maps. Apple is getting into the fray, and they have been buying up map companies and GPS like crazy since October. And they picked up this one company called Wi-Fi Slam. And this isn't your normal story about doing offline maps. If you listen to the MacBreak Weekly that I just alluded to earlier, whose link is in the show notes, they go into some big detail about this thing being able to look at your gyroscope, using your microphones, doing a mesh-like network and talking to other iPhones and saving that information up to the cloud. It is really freaky how they're doing this to be able to determine and make a map of the indoors. The downside to this, as they talk about a little bit, is there's a privacy issue because you're giving all this telemetry about your phone and what you're doing with your phone, which again, may be a value add, maybe something that you're willing to do in order to have an indoor map. But you're also using a lot of data and battery, because this thing is looking at a lot of features on your phone. In the current version that's kind of sort of out there that people have tested and used. But I mean, are you guys, I've whined a bunch about how I'm willing to give up stuff for Google now. Would you guys be willing to give up battery and data to be able to get some, let's say like CSUN, as many iPhones that are there, your iPhones would be talking to other people's iPhones and it would be making kind of a real-time map of, say, the Manchester.
It's a game changer. I mean, it could potentially be, absolutely. At which point we'll all have backup battery devices, cases that charge or whatever. Only half a joke. There's probably some truth to that. But no, absolutely. I'm very interested in this whole indoor technology.
Yeah, I'd love it as well. And I mean, I would be okay with having a battery pack or something like that. It's not like we're carrying laptops around with a GPS receiver anymore. So, you know, I think that is an okay trade-off. Being able to walk through the mall and have accurate representations of where everything is, or going to a new hotel, even in a conference situation like CSUN, like you mentioned, being able to find the ballrooms and all that sort of stuff that could be at one end of the hotel or the other. And very useful stuff.
Well, there's already things like Waze, which is a community-based mapping system where people add stuff to an open source-ish kind of map. So they're doing stuff in real time, like you're traveling down the road and somebody says, hey, look, state trooper on the far right after you come over this hill. And Waze would kind of sort of tell you. And if you take that as being a value where people are transferring information and stuff like that, and you get that in real time, then you take what I've been talking about with Google Glass, where let's say you're somebody entrepreneurial out there takes the idea that I've talked about with Google Glass, where if you're walking and you're not sure where you are and you use somebody real time to look through a camera on Google Glass, imagine doing that with FaceTime. And so your map takes you as good as you could go, but you could actually log into something kind of the way that deaf people use Relay and able to get someone who doesn't know sign language to talk to someone who does know sign language, who could then do sign language to the deaf person over a phone. Then you could do something like that with this for navigation, for orientation, in that you would be kind of stuck, but then you could activate your FaceTime camera and then they could say, hey, pan it over to the left. Yeah, the ladies' restroom is over there, so don't go in that one, Jamie. Stay far away. Go over to your right. I mean, that kind of stuff was science fiction for us not too long ago. But Between what Apple's talking about possibly doing here and what Google's already doing with Google Glass, this stuff is getting cool quickly.
It really is. And imagine if this is just a dream, but imagine if for the sake of accessibility and that sort of thing, if Google and Apple actually collaborated on something. Ooh, I know that's, I know, but we can
Google
dream.
Did announce if they get sued first, they'll sue others. You know,
they
announced this week that if you challenge them on a patent, they'll challenge you on a patent, but otherwise they're going to let patents go open. So I kid, but it's possible. You're absolutely right.
They're just going to merge into one big conglomerate called Google.
Called a singularity held by Ray Kurzweil.
Yes. Well, coming up after the break, the mailbag, playing games, and making lists right here on the Serotalk podcast.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2.
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Serotalk Podcast 148. Let's open up the mailbag. Ricky, what do we have this time?
Well, we don't have anybody throwing it at me, which is certainly an improument. So,
Mike chastised Joe and me, told us to not ever do that again to you. So we got a pretty good sound talking to. Yeah.
May have actually become an HR issue. So, definitely.
In the policy, do not pelt people with audio files. The first report that we have is from Lynn Heddle talking about the NPR app.
Hey, this is Lynn Heddle again from Birmingham. I submitted a previous iReport in which I was complaining bitterly about the accessibility and now lack of for the National Public Radio app they just updated. I wrote them a letter to the developer, and I guess this is just to encourage everybody to do this when they find things wrong with apps. But I have since gotten a reply back from them apologizing and saying they were going to come out with another update with voiceover support and would I be interested in giving them some feedback. And I replied and said, yes, I would, you know, because I wanted to encourage people doing voiceover any time they wanted to do it. So today I got an invitation, so to speak, to join some kind of a testing, this what it seems like anyway. They send out apps before they are released and let you try them out. So, and they were saying that they didn't know whether that was accessible, but let them know. So they are, you know, sometimes if you complain, you get some action.
Thank you, Lynn. And that is extremely encouraging that you were able to reach out to them and they actually want you to test what's going on. I think it's important when a business says, we'll not only fix it, but we want to get an expert here to verify that we have, in fact, done what we set out to do. Lynn does go on to say that she didn't have such good luck with the Coast to Coast AM app, and that's very unfortunate, but perhaps persistence will pay off. And whatever the case, I think we should all be encouraged to at least approach app developers and ask if they can make apps accessible, because they may not even know unless we say something to them. The next iReport we have is from Janine, and she is responding to Randy Hammer's question of last week about Braille displays.
Hi, Serotech gang. This is Janine. I am calling about the issue with, well, actually it's not really an issue, but it's the comments you wanted on how you use a Braille display and what it's useful to you for. One of mine is the one Ricky said, you know, that when you're looking up a piece of information, for example, when I order something online or on the phone, food often, I would not want to be listening to my screen reader in one ear and the phone in the other ear, especially because I wear earbuds for the phone and it just blocks out what I'm hearing from my screen reader, and it's just way too slow and confusing. The other time that's really important for me to have a Braille display is when I do HTML coding and I'm, you know, developing a website or reviewing code, source code for someone else's website for accessibility testing. Because after a while, href equals quote and so forth, then you get your less thans and your greater thans and your slashes, and everything just starts to sound alike. And I'm much more accurate if I'm actually reading it in Braille, especially if it's been a long day. So thanks, and that's my comment.
And last, we have an email from Mary Emerson, who is also responding to Randy's question. And her responses are very similar to Janine's in that she's talking about being a technical writer, and she also did some programming. And so being able to look at the punctuation and the formatting rather than listening to all of this via speech certainly helped a lot. Also, she is losing hearing on one side, and so it would be very difficult for her to, say, have a headset in one ear and a phone in the other, perhaps. So there are just a couple of answers to your question, Randy, about why do people want these Braille displays?
Resources at serotalk.com is the way to get a hold of us. We love hearing from you. Also, leave an iReport on iBlink Radio using either your Android device or your iPhone. Go to our webpage, serotalk.com, and leave a comment on the blog. If you go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast, please write a review. Give us a good rating, and that kind of helps us over there in the Apple ecosystem. It's time now for Roundabout. We'd all like to think that we're going to live forever, but we know that we are not. And one of the things that very often happens, and I know I've spent time in healthcare, and so I've seen this, when people are no longer able to make decisions for themselves or when they do pass away, sometimes things are not in order. People don't know what's supposed to happen to your stuff or how you want things distributed. This is an excellent article. It's a great resource, a very comprehensive list of things that really need to happen, that we really should take seriously. You know, Ricky, we look at these articles, these headlines, sometimes they almost look like a joke, you know, you're going to die someday, how to prepare for it. But this is a pretty good article, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And there are things in here that I just would not have considered for whatever reason. Not only does it talk about what to do to prepare for when you have passed away, you know, getting a will together, gathering all of your life insurance policies and various financial things, including your debt and all of your income, getting all that in one place. But it talks about what if you have an accident and you can't make medical decisions for yourself. You have to prepare for that as well and get some things in place. Lastly, it talks about social media, and this wouldn't have even been a discussion 10 years ago. You should talk about what you want to happen with your feeds. Some people may keep their Facebook page as a memorial. There's one in particular that I can think of, Jeff Dunn from Guiding Eyes. Many of us miss him very, very much. And every year on his birthday, people kind of memorialize him on his wall, and they talk amongst themselves about memories that they have of Jeff. So some people choose to do that, and some people would rather this just go away and, you know, have your Facebook page disappear. So you've got to decide that kind of thing, get it all together in one master file so that whoever is taking care of you once you are gone, you want to make it as easy on them as possible.
And we've had stories here about tweeting from the grave before, and even some responses of how some people have felt about that here on the feedback section of Mailbag. It's a very interesting idea. There are more and more people actually doing websites like that. I know Brian Brushwood had that one where if you didn't log in every, I think, 30 days, it automatically sent out your tweets or your emails or whatever you had already had set up for just said occasion. So that's really interesting. And, you know, the digital footprints that we leave behind are just sometimes as important as the real ones that we leave in the sand as we walk through this life. So very interesting stuff. Remember also that states vary with their laws. And so community property, you might not always think about this, but your spouse and how that stuff goes across. If you don't have that stuff, makes it much easier for, makes it much harder for them to be able to lay claim to things. And that's also mentioned in the article. And I've seen that happen in a lot of situations, especially if people live in alternate states. So very, very interesting stuff. Remember, you can check that out and more, serotalk.com. We've discussed a lot here about virtual worlds, and we talked about GPS, and we talked about the coolness that's coming with Apple and Google. There are games that are doing really well at putting you in virtual worlds. There's Papa Sangre that we've talked about before. There's Zombie Run, and there's some other ones that we've mentioned on the show. What was that one just recently with the shotgun? I can't remember which one it was, the zombies. It was free for a while. And these games are really starting to kick in. And we have a link here to another game, which is supposed to help with orientation and mobility and help demonstrate the ability to be able to learn more virtually through these kinds of audio cues. Do you guys like the audio environment cue kind of thing? I mean, Zombie Run, they've talked about it on TripleClick a couple of times. I've not played that. It sounds interesting to me. Papa Sangre, I'm a big fan of. That's kind of neat.
I've not played Zombies Run either. This concept that we're talking about right now is something that's really just in the development stages. I don't know that it's actually something you can get yet, but it's the idea is that if you would map a building, then a blind person could play a game, quote unquote, where you navigate the building and you would actually get badges and that sort of thing. I like the idea. I'm just not sure how you would actually use it. I mean, how do you decide, oh, I want to play a game where I navigate the CSUN Convention Center? I mean, I'm just not sure how you make that truly playable, I guess.
It's like the conversation we had last year about Papa Sangre and the GPS, and you're supposed to be able to know where the other
players.
Oh,
playing it in a field.
Yeah. And I said, you know, everybody needed to wear like rubber clothing and safety helmets. And
I actually love this idea. Maybe it's just the way I process things. I don't play many audio games for whatever reason. I like word games better, and I may play MUDs with sound packs and things like that, but I have never really, for whatever reason, gotten into the walk around a building and use sound cues to do this or that. But I think having a building mapped with audio cues would be really, really useful, just because if you're navigating around this thing and there may be the sounds of your feet hitting a tile floor and then the sounds of yourself going down a carpeted set of stairs, and just having those little cues of, okay, this is where that turns from tile to carpet. So I know that if I'm headed down this way, that's going to happen eventually, and I'm headed the right direction. Or again, other little cues like that, that you're never going to get on a tactile map, and you might forget them just in walking through the building once. But if it's in a game form, maybe a different part of your brain takes note of that, and it could be useful.
I would love to try it. I mean, I would immediately download it when it's available. I guess maybe it would be like iAssociate 2, where you just have different levels you can choose from, and maybe you do want to navigate such and such hotel, or I mean, there'd have to be something fun. I mean, there'd have to be some playability there. I'm not sure whether you would go pick up a snack at Starbucks or what they would do, but I mean, obviously there's gotta be something besides just walking around the building.
And you would encounter the evil signs along the way that try to jump out in your way and make you trip.
Yeah.
There's a game right now that's working with Google Maps and a little bit with Google Now called Egress. And it does that. So you could be actually traveling to a gas station and you'll get a pop-up to let you know that that gas station is held by another in the freeholds. And it's taking the real world and adding game elements to it. I don't know if that's talkback friendly or not. I've not played with it because I have enough fun traveling. I don't know if I'm ready to play a game and travel at the same time, unless it was like, you know, a shopping mall where there was like, you know, abandoned and you could do that kind of thing and not worry about it. But sometimes just navigating is its own game.
But I think this is so that you could play it before and then go travel.
But the idea is that this is happening in the real world, that people are doing this already with augmented reality games. And so this is no different for us than it would be for what people are doing already. So, and of course, the D&D in me, you know, says I was already doing this in my head on graph paper. So why not? Right. You know,
right.
So the for those reasons, I think it's really cool. And it's just an extrapolation of some of the things that already exist. And I'm down with it. I don't have an issue with it. What I think would be neat, though, and this is free again, entrepreneurial steal this idea, is instead of, you know, dining in the dark, which is only funny when you see side people come out that were wearing white that actually went to dining in the dark wearing white, which is kind of funny. And you serve spaghetti or something. The other idea is night vision cameras, and you blindfold or you shut all the lights off, and you do this in an abandoned shopping mall, and then you set those cameras up for live stream on YouTube. And I'm telling you, this is just money waiting to happen. It's a reality show. You know what's funny is there's a show on Sci-Fi. I've not watched this, but there's a show on Sci-Fi where they actually do turn the lights off and hand people things or make them guess what's in these boxes and what it smells like and can they get it right. I don't watch the Sci-Fi Channel Sci-Fi hardly anymore to be able to tell you what these shows are like, but I've seen on their anniversary special this show where they film it night vision and they hand people boxes and they have to guess what's inside. So I'm telling you, there's money to be made here. Making sighted people, torturing them in unique and interesting ways. I think there's a market.
I can see a reality show coming up soon.
Absolutely.
Let's get this together.
Dining in the Dark, the series?
Oh, yeah. You could do the escape from a building scenario. So you're on the top floor of this hotel and you need to make your way down and because the evil zombies are after you or something.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know. Yeah.
Sounding a little bit like Freedom and Demon by Daniel Suarez. Another book segment, everybody.
All right. Yelling in the show notes. Well, I think we have probably about talked ourselves out, or if we're not careful, we will move on into EOL. So let's go ahead and bring this podcast to a close. Once again, like to thank you for sticking around and joining us for another week. Hope you enjoyed our April Fool's episode as well, as much as we enjoyed putting that together for you. www.sarotalk.com is our blog and show notes page. Go check it out. Leave a comment. Leave an iReport on iBlink Radio using iOS or Android. Go to iTunes and leave a comment over there as well if you'd like. Also, check out our other podcasts, that Android show, Triple Click Home, High Contrast, End of Line Show. If you go to serotech.com, you can actually look at episodes of all of our podcasts. Right there, you can see the latest episodes of everything that's out, and just kind of a little smorgasbord, little sampler platter, if you will, and just pick and choose and enjoy. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.